Let's be honest. Life's hard sometimes. We get discouraged, struggle in our faith, and it's easy to feel alone. Despite how you might feel sometimes, know that God's got your back. And so do we. Vision's prayer line team are ready to pray for whatever you're going through. Text your prayer request to 0401 132 888 and we will be praying for you. Or click prayerline at vision.org.au. That's 0401 132 888 or vision.org.au. It's another way Vision is helping you look to God daily.
realfaith.org.au
4972319, that phone number there is mine. If a policeman asks my name, I will sing this song to him again. So I taught this song to my children, and I thought, well, if ever they do get lost, go to a policeman and sing them that song.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through, helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Jenny Flack has been entertaining Australian children with Christian music for over 30 years. But what people might not be familiar with are the stories behind her songs and Jenny's story in general. Unfortunately, along with the laughter and the fun of children's entertainment, there has also been heartache and pain behind the scenes. Jenny joins us from her home in Phillip Island today to share her story. Jenny Flack, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Eric. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Glad to have you with us, and let's go all the way back to your childhood. Where were you born and raised?
Well, I was born in Ivanhoe and raised in Melbourne, and spent most of my life in Melbourne until 1995 when I moved to the United States, and I lived there for 5 years before coming back.
Okay, and spiritually, you became a Christian at a very young age?
Yes, I did. I was nearly five. Mm-hmm. It was Christmas night at my grandmother's house, and my father, who always prayed with me before I went to sleep at night and introduced me to the ways of God from a very, very young age, he led me to the Lord that night, and I still remember it, and it's very, very clear in my mind. So I was nearly five.
Okay, and also music was a big part of your life.
A very big part of my life. I came from a very, very musical family. My grandparents on both sides of my family were musicians. My mother, she studied at the Conservatory of Music in piano. She became a piano teacher. My father was a singer. My two siblings and I were brought up learning to play the piano, and then my brother decided to go for the cello, and my sister decided to go for the flute, and I decided to go for the guitar, as well as learning to play the piano when we were little. We all chose different instruments from then on.
Mm-hmm. And growing up, what role did music play in your life?
My parents were very, very encouraging with music. At school, if there was any opportunities for singing with choirs and so on, you know, we were involved in choirs and musicals, and I sang in a madrigal in high school, and my brother actually led a number of musicals in the high school as he grew older. Mm-hmm. So music was a big part. And when I was a young teenager, that's when my interest in the guitar first came, and I used to come home from school every night. I'd get out the guitar and I'd get out my little folk song book, and I would just play and play and play until it was time for dinner. And then I'd have my dinner and then I'd go back and play and play and play. I just loved the guitar.
Wow. So you really loved music. And then you were married at 20 years old?
Yes. Married at 20. Yeah. Sounds like a child now.
And had children?
Yes. I had six pregnancies altogether. Mm-hmm. I lost three children, which was really, really sad. And mm-hmm. One stillborn. He was a little boy, and he was actually my third son. And the other two I lost sort of later in the pregnancy. Yeah, so that part of my life was pretty sad. But mm-hmm. I have three beautiful, healthy sons, and I have a wonderful relationship with each one of them. And they're all musicians.
Oh, wow. So the tradition is continuing.
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. Yes. In fact, my two older sons, they used to tour with me when I was touring Australia, not just Australia. My music was in Singapore and New Zealand mm-hmm. and America as well. So it wasn't just in Australia where music played an important role.
Now, speaking of your sons, they inspired your first song. Is that right?
Well, yes, they did. The oldest was 4, then the next one was 3. And one day, unbeknownst to me, they climbed out their bedroom window and they decided to go exploring down the street.
Wow.
And I thought that they were playing happily in their room. I got a telephone call to say, Jenny, we're really sorry to tell you this, but we have just discovered your two sons playing down a drain outside our building.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So, of course, I'm freaking out.
Yeah, exactly.
And raced down there, and I got them and brought them back home again. And then my husband had to work out a way of locking the windows so that they couldn't get out any and do that again.
Yeah.
But it inspired me because I was thinking, if this should ever occur again and they got lost, how would they know to tell the people where they lived? Or mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, yeah, they're only 3 and they're only 4. And so I came up with the idea of making up a little song. And if you don't mind, I'll sing it for you. Because,
please
because
do.
Because I remember it so well.
Yeah.
And it went, 4972319, that phone number there is mine. If a policeman asks my name, I will sing this song to him again. 4972319. And so the song goes on.
Oh,
like
wow.
That. So I taught this song to my children.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if ever they do get lost, I said to them, go to a policeman and sing them that song. And they still remember that telephone number.
To this day, they still remember it?
They still remember to this very day. They remember that phone number.
So you better not change that number then.
Well, of course, they've had many, many numbers since then. But it's very interesting, you know, that I have learned that music is probably one of the most powerful tools that we have in communicating things to children that we don't want them to forget. I mean, not just children, but, you know, mm-hmm. adults as well.
Oh, yeah.
Music is like, you know, saying the same word twice or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's so powerful.
And, yeah, you're absolutely right, because unfortunately, I can sing along with commercials from my childhood.
Yeah,
some things you don't
too.
Want to remember.
Exactly, yeah.
But it is effective.
Oh, certainly, it is.
When Jesus forgives, he forgets what I've done, and the bad things I did have now gone. When Jesus forgives, he forgets what I've done, and the bad things I did have now gone.
So this is how it all started. Then what happened?
So then I had my fourth son, Nathan, and we moved from Ivanhoe to Dubuque Bank, which is a...
Don't tell me you changed the phone number.
Yeah, we changed the phone number.
Have to teach them a new song now.
By that stage, they were old enough to know their address and that was okay.
Okay.
And we moved into an area that was very new, a new neighbourhood, and there were sort of houses being built all over the place. But there was nothing for kids to do. There was, you know, no sports things going on at the time or anything much.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother-in-law was a SEBS leader.
And what is
SEBS
that?
SEBS is an acronym for the Church of England Boys Society.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bit like the Cubs. And they had a uniform, and but it was run through the Anglican Church.
Mm-hmm.
And in my street, there were about 8 boys. And so I put it to the Anglican Church that I was attending at the time that maybe a couple of the fathers, the dads, would be prepared to train as a SEBS leader, and that we would, you know, we'd run a SEBS group in Dubuque. because there were so many children, especially boys.
Yep.
And anyway, none of them are interested. Oh, we've got too many other things to do. And anyway, it so happened that I made this suggestion in the middle of the annual general meeting, and I said, well, you know what? If I was a man, I would do it. And if women were allowed to be SEB's leaders, then I would be one of them. And unbeknownst to me, there was a chap sitting right in the back, and he happened to be the regional manager of SEB's in that area. And he said, they do let women do it. So I went and I trained, and I became what's called a governor in the SEB's. And so I started a SEB group in Viewbank, and that group grew, and then we had to split it because it became too big, and I became the branch governor of two different groups, one for younger boys and then for older boys.
For he's thrown them in the deepest part of God's forgetful sea, where there's a great big sign that says no fishing, no fishing, no fishing, no.
Our guest today is Jenny Flack, who's been entertaining Australian children with her Christian music for over 30 years. We just heard how she became a leader in her local Church of England Boys Society, or SEBS. Next, we're going to find out how being involved in that boys society eventually leads to her career in writing songs for children. All that and more is coming up when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and our guest today is Christian children's entertainer Jenny Flack, who's sharing her life journey. As we heard before the break, she became a leader of her local Church of England Boys Society, or SEBS as it's otherwise known as. This occurred when there weren't any followers who were willing to do it. Now we're going to hear how that involvement in SEBS led to her career in writing and performing songs for children.
Ooh, you gotta feed your mind on the good things, yeah, you gotta feed your mind on what is right. Feed your mind on the pure and lovely and think about it day and night.
It was during my work in the SEBS where music really started to play perhaps a more purposeful role. The boys wore a uniform, and when they got their uniform, they had to, there was a ceremony, and they had to make statements and promises. And one of the things they had to promise was, I promise that I will read so much of the Bible every day. I promise that I will pray to God every day for my friends and my family. I promise that, da-da-da. There were a lot of promises.
Yeah.
And I started to wonder, what do these boys understand about promises? Do they really know? They're only 8 years old, you know, seven and eight. And so I asked them. And the answers that I got were like, one little boy said, well, cross your heart and hope to die if you tell a lie. I thought, what? And then another kid said, oh, you put your fingers behind your back and you cross them, and then you can say whatever you like and it'll be okay.
Oh, wow.
So the more questions that I asked, the more I understood that they had no idea what a promise was. They didn't know what they were saying. And so I wrote a song called What is a Promise?
What is a promise? A promise means keeping your word. And what does keeping your word mean? Well, listen and I'll tell you right now.
But then I realized from there that music was indeed very powerful, and I started to write a lot of other songs for them, And the priest in charge of the Anglican church that I was going to at the time, he used to ask me to find or source children's songs that would support his children's talks.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do that week after week. And one day, I couldn't come up with anything. I couldn't find a suitable song. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a go at writing one. So I did. And I wrote my very first song for the church. And when the minister found out that I was able to actually write material, mm-hmm. as well as just sing it,
yeah.
he asked me whether I would do more writing. And he'd often, you know, just drop in, stick his head around the door and say, "Hey, Jen, I'm going to be speaking about such and such on Sunday morning. How about you come up with a song for us?"
Mm-hmm.
And I would take him up on his challenge and I would write a song. And slowly they yeah. began to grow.
So you really enjoyed that?
I loved it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I yeah. really did. Mm-hmm. I really loved it. I loved hearing people singing my songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really good. My husband, actually, he could see that I had a talent that he felt could expand.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that every year at Cooma there was a Christian music seminar. And he decided that he would record some of the songs that I had written, and he'd record them, you know, professionally in a proper recording studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sent me off to up to Cooma. And I went up there and I showed my music to people who were of some consequence in the music industry up there. And they said, "You've got to get these songs heard. You've got to.
Mm.
And they had a number of concerts they held every lunchtime. And so you put your name down at breakfast and lunchtime came around and they would have about, I don't know, maybe 8 people that would get to sing. And anyway, they would choose the very best of each day. And then the very best of each day got to sing at the big major concert at the end of the week. And anyway, fortunately for me, I sang a song that I wrote for a 14-year-old boy in our church called Song for Anthony. And I wrote it for his baptism. And as I say, he was 14 years old, so he was an older child who had come to the Lord. And anyway, I decided that I would sing that song at Cooma. And I was chosen as the best performer of the day.
Oh,
and
wow.
I got to sing at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that concert, I was approached by 3 different record labels to sign. They wanted to sign me to
oh,
do
wow.
children's material. But I was encouraged not to.
Why is that?
Well, the reason for it was because the music industry in Australia was very small.
And this is the 1980s you were talking about.
This was, this was about 1982 at
mm-hmm.
the time.
Yep.
And there were only about, oh, I don't know, maybe 450-odd Christian music bookstores throughout the whole of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't very many at all.
Yeah.
And so I was advised by some musicians who had already gone through the recording thing with labels, and they said, "Don't sign with anybody. If you can do it yourself, make up your own label and go direct to those stores."
Hmm.
And that's exactly what I did. So I recorded an album of music which was entitled Mugwumps and Important Things.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent out a copy of the, because in those days there were no CDs, it was all cassettes.
Oh, yeah.
So I sent out a copy, a cassette, a copy of the label to every Christian bookstore in Australia,
mm-hmm.
and I gave them a good deal on, you know, if they bought, you know, 5, you know, that they would
yeah.
get extra one and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I was really quite astounded at how, you know, the response was quite amazing, because there was no Australian children's musicians recording children's songs at the time. So there were no children's albums by Australians.
So you were a pioneer.
So I was, I was at that time. And Scripture Union got to hear about the music, and they were running their big annual Scripture Union SUFM children's mission training day they had towards the end of the year, and they asked me whether I would perform some of the songs, and I used backing vocals, some of the children from my church, and so we went and we performed, and the music just sold right off the shelf, just like one after the other after the other, and then people started asking me whether I would come and teach their teachers about music and children, and So a seminar program started. That was the other thing that I was told. They said, if you sign up with somebody, they will sell your music, but you won't make any money out of it for a very long time, because they will have to take back, you know, all of the production costs and et cetera. But if you do it yourself, you'll make enough money quickly enough to be able to go and record another album. And that's exactly what I did. So within 2 years, I'd recorded two albums. And then in the next 2 years, I'd recorded another one, and then another one, and then another one. And so that's, you know, that's how it went. And the more I became known really quite quickly, my very first school concert was in Sydney. A guy in Sydney was, he was running a radio program, and he came across my album, and he got in touch with me, and he said, "Will you come up to Sydney and do a concert for me at this big school?" So my very first concert was up in Sydney, and I had to, the children were all outside, out in the playground, and I stood on a table with a microphone in front of me and did my first concert like that.
Very basic, huh?
Yeah.
Now, that has to be very gratifying to know, well, there are many people middle-aged that grew up listening to you and your music.
Oh, yeah. Many, many, many people,
Do they come up to you sometimes and say, hey, I grew up
all the time,
singing your
even
songs?
Now, I receive letters from people, emails from people.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll tell you a story. When my children became older, my two older sons began working with me. They became puppeteers. I became a puppeteer as part of my work, and I taught them, and they became puppeteers as well. And we started to work once a month at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne, and we used to do concerts for the sick children. And they would wheel the kids down in their wheelchairs or their wheelie beds or you know, with their drips and everything. And they would come into this big room that we would set up, and we had a big puppet theatre, and, you know, we would do a concert and try to make them smile and laugh as much as we could. And one day I received a letter from a lady that I didn't know, and I opened the letter, and inside was another letter sealed. I thought, well, this is a bit odd. I pulled out the first letter, and there was a little message on the top that said, please do not read the second letter until you have read this one. So I thought, right, okay, this is curious. And I began to read, and it was, Dear Jenny, words to this effect anyway, Dear Jenny, I just want you to know what an amazing difference you have made to our family. We heard you as a family sing at the Royal Children's Hospital when our youngest son was being treated for leukemia. We live a long way from Melbourne, and our son is very ill. We have not laughed for many months, and we all attended your concert, and for the first time in months we laughed together as a family, and I just want you to know how much that meant. We loved your music so much that I decided to go out, find the rest of your albums and buy them all, which I did. Mm. And our family has been enjoying your music ever since. And there was a little bit of patter that, you know, went on along that along those lines. But she was just so rapt, you know.
Wonderful.
But then it came to the second letter.
Mm-hmm.
And I curiously unsealed it and pulled it out. And she said, "Dear Jenny, I am very sad as I read this letter to have to tell you that our son didn't make it."
Mm-hmm.
That he passed away, and she gave me the date of when it had happened. But she wanted me to know how much the music had meant to him and to them during those last days of his life. And it brings tears to your eyes, you know, to read something like that. And that was, for me, it was heartwarming and heartbreaking at the same time, if you could understand that.
Yep.
Feed your mind on the good things, yeah, you gotta feed your mind on what is right. Feed your mind on the pure and lovely, and think about it day and night.
That's the music of our guest today, Jenny Flack, who's been entertaining Australian children with her Christian music for over 30 years. We're going to hear more of her story and more about the impact Jenny's had on people's lives next time as we hear part two of our conversation with her. So we invite you to join us again next time for part two of our conversation with Christian children's entertainer, Jenny Flack.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.